This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Scenes from a Marriage. For your awards consideration, Scenes from a Marriage, the HBO original limited series starring Jessica Chastain and Oscar Isaac. Lauded by the New York Times as a soulful study of intimacy that is exquisitely acted, Scenes from a Marriage is now streaming on HBO Max.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 44 of The Fourth Wall. I'm, of course, your host, Griffin Schiller, and this is the show where we break down the fourth wall of the film industry as we get an inside look through our conversations with industry professionals ranging from writers, directors, actors, you name it. This show is, of course, part of the Playlist Podcast Network, where you can find the rest of our amazing film and television-centric shows. We're talking stuff like The Discourse, Be Real, The Playlist Podcast, and so much more. Whatever your fix is, we definitely have you covered over there, so consider subscribing to the podcast feed, and you'll also get more episodes of The Fourth Wall, which, as we always mention on this show, is the best damn show we got there. No disrespect to the other shows on there, they're all great, but I mean, come on, I got a little bit of a vested interest in The Fourth Wall, and you want to hear more episodes, so subscribe. We have a very special episode here for you to ring out the end of 2021, and it is a conversation with the most delightful, genuine, and kind-hearted human I probably have ever had an interview with. Maybe that's just recency bias, but I don't know. This guy was great, and I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. I'm, of course, talking about Zachary Levi. Now, many of you were probably first introduced to Zachary Levi with his breakout role as the titular character in Chuck back in 2007. It was this spy comedy series that ran for 5 seasons on NBC, and I loved it. That was the first time I got introduced to Zachary Levi, and I thought he immediately captured my attention with a lot of charisma. And it was just a lot of fun. And so getting to see how his career has evolved over the years has been a real treat. And many of you might not know, but Zachary Levi is first and foremost a big theater guy. I mean, he started to make a name for himself on the stage of the Ojai Art Center with starring roles in productions such as Grease, Oklahoma, and The Wizard of Oz. And that's really what led him to getting the role in Chuck. And then from there, he went on to actually audition for James Gunn for the role of Star-Lord. And during our conversation, Zachary goes into that process a little bit and how that audition actually led to him getting the role in Shazam. And then, of course, we get into a little bit of Shazam 2, you know, what he wanted to do, what we can expect, all of that good stuff. But the main thing that we were here to talk about was his new film, American Underdog, where he plays Kurt Warner, the talented and dedicated quarterback who fought his way into the NFL in the 90s. Warner's efforts paid off with a 12-season career that included winning the Super Bowl and being named MVP of that game and the season as a whole. And this story is really the quintessential rags-to-riches sort of tale. It's very inspiring. It's very uplifting. It's a great sports biopic. And I think that Zachary Levi gets an opportunity here to really showcase, what he's capable of in terms of an actor in a more dramatic role in something that meant a lot to him. And so we talk about, you know, what the actor's equivalent of Kurt Warner's journey is, how it pertains to him. We also kind of talk about the importance of kindness and humility in Hollywood, what impression he hopes he has left on people with his brand, and so much more. This was really just a blast. It was a lot of fun. I felt like we instantly hit it off, and then the conversation only got better from there. And anytime you can have that happen, it's just the greatest feeling in the world. And seriously, Zachary Levi is just one of the nicest human beings, and he was kind enough with his time. Actually went a little bit over time. He was kind enough to give me some great answers and a little tease as to what we can expect with Shazam Fury of the Gods. But before we go any further, the most important thing is that American Underdog is now playing in theaters. If you're looking for a feel-good sports movie this holiday season, this is definitely the one to go see, especially if you've already seen King Richard and you want to, you know, continue that feeling of just like, ah, yes, warm coziness. I love this. American Underdog definitely will fill that void. We've also got a poll question here for you today if you're listening to this on Spotify, which is, what is your favorite Zachary Levi role? What's your favorite film of his? What's your favorite performance? We want to hear about it, so be sure to let us know and vote in that poll. All right, enough from me. Let's get into this thing. Here is my conversation with Zachary Levi. I guess a good place to start with this would probably be, you know, the beginning of the film, when we're introduced to Kurt, he kind of has like an issue with being able to stay in the pocket. You know, that's like a big thing. That's a big obstacle that he has to overcome, you know, for his professional career, at least as an athlete. And I'm kind of curious, what would you say, at least for you, is the actor equivalent of learning how to stay in the pocket?
Ooh, wow. That's a good question. What was that journey for me? You know, I would say, probably an equivalent for me in that. I've never even thought of that comparison, but which is why I think it's such a great question. It might be, you know, when I was growing up as a, you know, person and as an actor, I started in theater, and in theater, everything is way bigger. You are projecting to the little old lady in the back row to make sure she can hear all the words, and your diction needs to be clearer so people can understand what you're saying. You're singing a lot of it. You're doing everything's more, you know, just it's bigger. It's more animated. It's all of these things. Well, transitioning into film and television, you got to learn how to chill that out. Yeah. You got to learn that now you know you don't have this massive stage and all of this air to fill, this whole audience to fill. You've got this camera that's like, you know, sometimes you want a close up and you're right here. And if you're giving musical theater animated face, you're doing all this stuff. Well, that doesn't work on camera. Mm. So you have to learn how to trust yourself. You have to learn how to trust your ability to put a character together, but not have to force it, not have to project it so much. And that took me a while, you know, like. I was doing theater still all the way until I was, you know, 20, 21, doing community theater and stuff. I've since done Broadway, but in that part of my life, I'd come up, and most of the jobs, most of the TV stuff that I was getting was multi-camera sitcoms, which are kind of like doing theater. You know, you've got a live audience, and it definitely is more animated, a little bit bigger. And so that fit well. But in order for me to ultimately transition into doing stuff that's more subtle, more dramatic, all that jazz, including something like American Underdog, you have to learn how to, you know, sit back in that and not feel like you have to force it, not feel like you have to put more behind it. So I guess that would be the closest thing I could think of, you know, staying in the pocket, just like stay in the pocket of the character. You don't need to force the play. Sometimes you might take a hit, but that's part of, you know, figuring it out.
Yeah, well, that's a great way of looking at it, because I would always, at least, like, you know, when I was, you know, trying to think of what that equivalent would be, I would always think, you know, finding that the right place of emotionality. But I, what you just said, where sort of just like where you came from, that theater background, learning how to like translate to, or I guess dial it back for on camera stuff. That's a really interesting thing that I hadn't even considered. So yeah, for sure. Well, I guess sticking to Kurt's journey, you know, one of the things that he sort of had to do throughout this film is he has to, you know, swallow his pride, I guess, a couple of times and take jobs that he didn't have to in order to, you know, support his family and whatnot. And then eventually, you know, the biggest one of all, obviously making the decision to play arena football. But that eventually got him to, you know, the NFL, got him noticed by people. And so I'm kind of curious, in a similar sense to that first question, what was that? What was arena football? What was your arena football, I guess I would say?
Oh, yeah. Again,
I'm trying
back to back. No, I love it. I mean, you know, oftentimes you get asked a lot of the same questions. So this is refreshing. I don't know. What was that? Well, listen, I mean, I bust tables for years. I worked at a car wash for a year and a half. Like, these are not things I dreamed of. These are not things that I loved to do, but also these are not things that I didn't give all of myself to. Like, when I was bussing tables, I was the best busser you ever saw. When I was working at the car wash, I bring 110% of my energy, was trying to be as positive as I could, you know, cool with the customers, cool with my coworkers, like whatever it was. Like, I just think it's important, no matter what you're doing, that you give it your all. I think that's when you start finding things opening up to you in positive ways. If you're just half-assing it and you're, you know, you're showing up and you're, you know, punching the clock, but you don't want to be there and you got a negative attitude, like those things don't help you get closer to the thing you're dreaming of. I don't think. So I definitely had those, you know, those leaner years of having to work jobs that I really didn't love. But I don't know that as far as like, what was my Arena Football League? I mean, you know, my Arena Football League was, I guess, that, you know, that was community theater. That was my years of doing theater that prepared me. And again, theater, I wasn't getting paid for. Sometimes I was doing shows where the cast outnumbered the people in the audience, nobody's showing up. It's very humbling. It's a very like, it's a dose of reality and like, okay, you know, you got a lot to still work through and grow through and a lot of lessons to learn as a man and as an actor. And having done all that stuff, it does ultimately, you know, it prepares you for when you get that opportunity. And once I got the moment and I was all of a sudden, I was literally discovered doing a community theater play one night and there was maybe 30 people in the audience. And this lady was a retired manager who got me to her protege, who got me to a casting director, who got me to one of the top agencies in Hollywood. And that all happened within like 6 months. And it all happened because I was working on my craft in community theater with no money and no accolades and nothing like that, but because I loved doing it and because it was something I knew I needed to do in order to become the actor that I wanted to be. So.
Yeah, for sure. And just so much of what you're saying, maybe it's just because I recently watched the film, but I you know, being a big theater guy, I don't know if you've seen Tick, Tick, Boom yet, but just, you know.
I haven't. I've heard great things, though.
It's incredible. So much of what you're saying is just about that creative drive and just like the perfectionism, you know, having to sacrifice things and then also just like, you know, being the best damn, you know, busser you can be. And because, you know, that drive is going to help you, you know, later down the road. It's, I don't know. It's just, I always love hearing about that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's all important. It's all part of it. Our journeys are multi-layered and dynamic. And, you know, I think one of the coolest things about Kurt's story is, you know, Vermeil talks to him about it toward the end there, but about, you know, like how he goes, how long you been out in the wilderness, son? And you know, and he's talking about, like you tried. And then, you know, he tried. Kurt gets that shot with the Packers. That doesn't materialize. And then he's kicking around trying to figure out what he's supposed to do with this dream. What is he supposed to do with his life? And in that time, he ends up going and doing, like you said, the thing he was, you know, very grudgingly to go and play ball in arena, even though in his mind, this is where people are who wanted to be NFL players are circling the drain. And he's not totally wrong by that. There's a lot of guys who didn't make it in the NFL, but now this is their fallback or whatever it is, right? And so he's, you know, stuck and his pride is getting him stuck in this stuff. And little did he know that was all supposed to be a part of the journey. Because if he didn't play arena ball, he would never have learned to be the quarterback that he needed to be in order to succeed as well as he did when he finally got the shot in the NFL. The fact that he played arena ball made him that much faster, just, incrementally. But that meant he had to get rid of the ball even faster than you would have to get rid of in the NFL, which means you have to read your coverage faster. You got to get it out of your hands faster. And that ended up becoming a huge gift for him when he, you know, in the greatest show on turf, that was part of the reason why they could stay ahead of the Ray Lewis's of the world and all that, because they were like, this is not at the speed that we normally play NFL. If he never went to the AFL, to the Arena Football League, it never would have happened. He never would have had that. And so, you know, it's easy to look back. Hindsight's 20/20. You go, wow, look at all these things I learned and I did. But that's why we got to, in the moment, kick back our ego and go, okay, hey, my life might not be timing out the way that I wanted it to or thought it should, but that doesn't mean that it's still not on track to do the things that I hope that I will do someday. I'm just supposed to learn some other stuff right now. I'm supposed to grow in some other ways right now.
Yeah, for sure. And for some reason, that just kind of reminded me of a tweet I guess I saw recently from James Gunn when he was talking on Twitter about, you know, how you auditioned. I guess you auditioned for Star-Lord, and that was originally. And then he said that eventually led to him recommending you to Peter Safran.
Yeah, to Peter Safran, who was my producer on Shazam. Yeah. Yeah. So I screen tested for James. James and I knew each other. We were friends. You know, we would play, have game nights at each other's homes and had a lot of mutual friends. And so, you know, he had asked me to come in and read for Star-Lord, and I did. And then that went to the next step. And then all of a sudden I was camera testing, and I was, oh man, I wanted that role so bad, like so bad. And it came down to me, I think it was like me and one other guy and Chris Pratt, but Chris was there. He was always like their favorite and he was hesitant to take it. And, you know, which is understandable. And it's a big franchise thing. It's Marvel. It's like, you know, I don't know. Does this work out? Does it not work out? Is this what everybody's going to know me as for the rest of my life? Like all those things that go through your head. Mm-hmm. And, but eventually, and I think smartly, he decided to take the job. And so then, you know, it didn't go my way or, you know, anybody else's way for that matter. But I hope, you know, it left enough of a good enough impression with James that when I was auditioning for then Shazam and his very dear friend and manager and sometimes producing partner, who ironically is today is his birthday, Peter Safran, who's also my producer on Shazam. He, you know, calls up James because this is how it works, right? Like people go and ask other people, what are your opinions of this person? And it's that, that doesn't only apply to, do you think they have the chops as an actor? A lot of times it's, hey, are they a decent person? Are they going to be fun to work with? Are they a diva? Are they, which is another very good reason or lesson for anybody out there who thinks that you can just come into these things and be a dick. Like you really can't. Your reputation does precede you and it can absolutely get you unhired. Fortunately, I was in good standing with James. I try to be in good standing with as many people as I can be and try to be a decent person. And I think between that and how well James thought I did in the Star-Lord test, he said, yeah, man, you really should give Zach an opportunity at this. I think he could be great. And I know for a fact that was definitely, I mean, was that the straw that broke the camel's back and sent it all over for me? I don't know that, but I'm sure it was part of that conversation. Absolutely. And I am indebted to James that he would, you know, believe in me enough to remember that and pass that info on.
Yeah, well, that's just sort of just fascinating hearing how all that went down. But obviously, it landed you in a great position. But I want to go back to something that you were kind of talking about, which is the reputation, or I guess you could say it like you know, your own personal brand, which is something that it's very entrepreneurial, and it's something that I don't think people necessarily think of when they think of you know, actors or even athletes. You know, that's such a huge part of the job. And I feel like now more than ever, there's something to be said about that. Like, you know, the Rock, Chris Hemsworth, Tom Cruise, like there's a certain image that you think of when you think of them. And I'm curious for you, you know, fans see you as a specific kind of person, but how do you want them to see you? And then what do you want people to think of when they think of Zachary Levi or I guess the brand that comes with that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, everybody in entertainment, and entertainment is all of the arts and all of the sports. I mean, you know, basketball players and actors and musicians we might be doing slightly different things within entertainment, but there's so much crossover because at the end of the day, these are not like jobs that are, they're not necessary for like the survival of the world per se. Now one can make the argument that the arts and entertainment are because they're kind of a lubricant that keeps things going. And I could go along with that, but you know, in the zombie apocalypse, entertainers are the first to go. We don't have those skills. Like I can't farm. I don't know how to work a proper industrial machine of any kind. But to your point though, what then kind of happens is part of being an entertainer is that therefore you are your own brand. I don't go door to door and sell vacuum cleaners. I go to audition door to door and I sell myself. And it's a very weird thing. It also can lead to a lot of, particularly with actors, I don't know so much about athletes, although I'm sure there's some crossover, but you know, as an actor, your whole life, particularly when you're beginning, it's nothing but rejection. It's nothing but no's. It's nothing but you showing up and hoping that somebody will give you this role or that role. And they're like, no. So you're already taking some emotionally fragile people and then constantly rejecting them over and over again. It's a very interesting business that we have, but you quickly learn, or hopefully you learn, that you are the brand. You are something that you need to pay attention to and how you carry yourself and the platform that you're given and success and all that jazz. But I will say that different people do their thing differently. I don't think about my brand in a way of like, what do I want my brand to be other than I want it to be authenticity. I want it to, and authentically, the things I care the most about are kindness, are grace, are empathy, are community, or creativity, truth and wisdom, and, you know, things that I think need to be more the pillars of how we're doing society. other people have brands that are much more flash, that are much more hype, that are the biggest and the baddest and whatever that is. And they sell really well. But I don't think that's good for the world at large. I really want people to feel like they can all be more transparent. They can all be more vulnerable. We can all be more authentic with each other. So to the extent that I have any decided like intentions with my brand, it's really just that it would be as real as possible. And I could have the realest conversations I can have with people. And sometimes, a lot of times those revolve around mental health and self-love and, you know, and joy and positivity and those types of things. And then occasionally, you know, you get into like, look, there's, you know, not all of life is rainbows and butterflies. There's a lot of things that are really hard, and being able to show your softer side or your more jaded side or your more angry side or whatever that is. I think there's a lot of people, a lot of entertainers that they're always on. There's not a moment where you see a negative part of their brand. And they, and to them, they think, well, that's because that's how I want to brand it. I don't want there to ever be a chink in the armor. I want this to be like a flawless image. And I think that we're all tired of that. I think that people are, more and more we see through it, right? I mean, you know, with the internet and social media and stuff like back in the day in Hollywood in the 30s and 40s, unless some, you know, the paparazzi, there were paparazzi, but there weren't that many of them. And, you know, they also didn't have digital cameras. They had like these big, like one bulb flashes. Oh, I got to get another bulb. I got to, you know, you could live very private lives as actors or whatever. I mean, people weren't, there was a lot of mystery involved. Now everybody knows your business all the time. You don't have there's no choice in that. So you can either keep trying to maintain this kind of false idea of who you are, or you can lean into it and say, hey, listen, I'm a person. I'm a person just like you. I'm a person just like them. I have my own struggles, my own weaknesses. I hope you can bear with me in those, and I will bear with you in yours. And that brings people together, I think, in a more galvanized and powerful way.
Yeah, for sure. And I think just in some of your entrepreneurial endeavors, I think you get that, whether it be, you know, your fitness and wellness brand, your company, you know, Nerd HQ and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so,
thanks.
No, it's, I really appreciate that. And I appreciate the authenticity, the just sort of realness for sure. I do have to start wrapping up now, but real quickly.
Griffin, I'm so sorry. Yeah, okay.
Really quick. Go. Really quick.
Okay, Shazam 2, I know you can't say a whole lot, but what was the most important thing that you wanted to do with that character going into a sequel?
Oh, I mean, just do it justice. Just make sure that we build on the success. And I think how well we did the first one. We made a really good movie the first time, and we got even more time and more budget and great new guest cast. And I just wanted to make sure that, you know, with a lot of sequels, sometimes people, they fall into that sophomore curse of like, oh, it's got to be five times bigger and five times better. And, you know, whether it's a movie or a TV show or an album or a video game or whatever. And you're like, as the person who loved the first one, you're just like, you didn't have to do all that. Just, you know, give us a new story and do the best you can with that builds to this. And I feel like we did that with the sequel. And I think people are really going to dig it.
Amazing. Awesome. Thank you so much for that. And thank you so much for your time. I really appreciated the conversation.
My pleasure, man. Absolutely. Yeah. Have a great rest of your day.
Yeah, you too, man.